We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 577 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Jim Hilton, and joining me today again to talk all things Paris Saint-Germain, but this time Barcelona against Paris Saint-Germain, leg one, and a little bit more preview on leg two, is Ed from PSG Talk. Thanks for joining, Ed.
Hey, thanks for having me. And a lot of your listeners ended up finding us over on YouTube. And thank you to everyone out there who said I'm the one reasonable PSG fan that you listen to. So thank you very much for listening to this podcast and mine as well. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, we could have a disclaimer up top that there has been a myriad of racial abuse, both Lamine Yamal, that's coming from inside the house too in Catalonia. There was a story, obviously, a Movistar journalist was let go for just outrageous comments, as well as Dembélé, who got it when he was a Barcelona player and now getting into the PSG player. And yeah, I mean, that's obviously kind of the thing that's uniting, that it's just gross. If you're frustrated with a player, like, we're going to get to Dembélé's celebration. That's a bit frustrating, but we could talk about that independently of any other comments you have to make about the player.
It's just a game, folks.
Yeah, I'm not sure where you want to start with our little review here, because we're going to do mostly that and then a little preview at the end. I kind of want to start with Kylian Mbappe, because I think Kylian Mbappe is why Barcelona wound up winning 3-2 and not losing 5-3 or whatever it is, 5-2. Did his performance at all concern you, or lack thereof? I'm going to let you say it from the PSG side, because I've kind of broken this down as to why Barcelona's defense did so well. But I want to hear if there's something that PSG didn't necessarily do that you've seen them do better in the past when teams do well against Mbappe like Barcelona did.
I think it speaks to the quality of Barcelona's defense. Is it Arroyo? Hopefully I pronounced that correctly. You guys have a fantastic defender right there. Don't ever let him go. Koundé, I thought, did a really good job. Just myself and what I saw talking with other after the match, we did a Twitter Spaces, and whether it was the double team or just the quality of the Barcelona defense, you hate to say it, but they sort of pocketed Mbappe on the night. We all expected him at home, which could have been, it may very well been his last Champions League home match for PSG. And to put a performance like that, I mean, you saw the atmosphere, everybody was up for it. He just was largely invisible. I kind of joked he pulled Erling Haaland, who was kind of invisible the night before for Manchester City. So just disappointing, but full credit to Barcelona. I tweeted after the match that PSG fans may not want to hear it, but we were second best. Barcelona fully deserved to win this one. And the defense completely pocketed Mbappe. Just looking at his stats here, 3 total shots, not good enough. Didn't get enough touches. If you want to give him any credit, I think it was Dembele's goal. Mbappe was the one that was able to keep the ball from going out of play and kind of ricocheted in the box and landed to Dembele. So if you want to give him a little bit of credit, maybe you give him there for a goal. But outside of that, there really wasn't much to speak of.
Well, my surprise was we had talked so much about Colomolani or Ramos being the starter, but instead Luis Enrique went with Asensio as the false nine. And what was surprising to that was that I'm not sure Xavi could have anticipated that, because I don't think the game plan defensively that Xavi went with would have worked if it had been Ramos or Colomolani, because the whole idea that I kind of would hope that Xavi would do was that he would trust Koundé. Don't get fancy. Don't throw Araujo off to the right back spot like he does against Vinny Jr. sometime. No, Koundé is in the form of his life right now. Put him against Mbappe. And what Koundé did and why he had such an excellent performance is he consistently forced Mbappe to go to his left, that being Mbappe's left, and consistently, even though he knew he'd be beat for pace, eventually he could close down that angle enough to slow down Mbappe for the help to arrive. And the reason the help was arriving from Araujo, from in behind him, because Araujo and Cubarsí were not tracking Asensio when he would then drop into the midfield, that being Asensio as that false nine, along with Roberto, who didn't have his greatest performance, which I'll get to in a second, but that trio did communicate well enough to deal with Asensio's movement, who, as much as you could say, oh, Mbappe wasn't the hero, Asensio was completely non-existent to the point where tactically Luis Enrique got something wrong, which is obviously why in the second half, I said it in my five headlines, Barcola coming on and Dembele switching over to the left side was, by Luis Enrique, admittance of, hey, this is not working at all. So Asensio wasn't even pulled for his performance. I don't know what else he was going to do because Barcelona kind of had that all figured out. And then De Jong, as I also predicted, was tasked with not building in a double pivot with Roberto offensively when Barca had the ball, but then defensively, it was basically Roberto as the lone defensive midfielder, and then De Jong would shade over to that left as this kind of like deep left midfielder to help Cancelo with Dembele, because Dembele also, like Mbappe, cannot be handled in a 1v1 situation over 90 minutes. That meant that, though, De Jong also had to, along with helping Cancelo with Dembele, he had to track the runs of Vitinha, which does wind up leading to the second goal, and why I thought Vitinha was so dangerous for PSG, because whenever he got downhill in the middle and Asensio would kind of drop so far that Vitinha would overlap or underlap him, I should say, then Roberto, he would either get faked out or Vitinha just did well against Roberto in 1v1 situations, and that is when PSG were at their most dangerous in that first half, other than Dembélé having the ball. So again, that's what the first half was. And again, just the big picture is I'm shocked to see that it was Asensio because, again, even though it was admittance that it wasn't working, I was confused that we didn't see Kolomwani and Ramos to the point where I was like checking social media and being like, is there an issue with Kolomwani? Is he injured? Or is there, I mean, is it a suspension that I'm missing? Because it was kind of baffling a little bit to Luis Enrique to almost the point where I feel like, yes, Barca's defense, 10 of 10, great. But the fact that Xavi got this exactly right was also had to do with Asensio being the starter.
100% agree. When I saw the starting lineup, I said, maybe Luis Enrique knows more than I do. Clearly got it wrong. After the match, he said, you know, I'm the manager, I make the decision, and he's the one that sees them in training. And he said, because we lost, clearly I got it wrong. And this is just a classic case of the manager overthinking this. I don't know how Asensio gets in the starting lineup. It's not like he's been playing major minutes. Outside of maybe a brief moments in the beginning of the season, he hasn't really stepped up at PSG. He did have an injury, so like he's been out for a little while. It shocked everyone. You spend an exorbitant transfer fee to bring in Kolomwani, and he doesn't even feature in this match. You have Gonçalo Ramos, who all he does is score goals when he's come on for PSG. He can't get a game. He's really our best aerial threat, and he doesn't play. Every PSG fan is left scratching their head as to why Asensio got the start. We're just as confused as you were.
Yeah, that was what was puzzling too. I don't watch PSG regularly, but I would have expected. Hasn't Kang In Lee played as a false nine at times this season? Because that's what I would have expected. And the comment you just made that Luis Enrique said in his postgame was in reference to somebody asking, how come you didn't start Warren Zaïre Emery?
Which, that's the other one.
Which to Luis Enrique's point, though, Barca scored within moments of him coming on, and Pedri also came on as well, but they came on at the same time. Barca scored within moments of him coming on, and then he was the one who lost Christensen and was out-jumped on that third goal. So it's this odd thing where, Luis Enrique can be right and wrong. Was he wrong to not start Zaïre Emery? Probably.
I want to push back on that goal because, yes, he was out-jumped, but I think if we have to blame anyone for that third goal, it has to be Marquinhos. If you watch it, Marquinhos jumps and completely whiffs on that header. And, Christensen has the height over Warren Zaïre Emery and easy header. And I also blame Donnarumma at 6'5". Why are you not coming out and claiming that? But Marquinhos should – he's experienced enough. He should have made that header. He does it. He whiffed on it, and then it led to the third goal. So I don't blame Zaïre Emery as much for that third goal.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I think, again, I would even push back the idea and almost agree with Luis Enrique that if he winds up starting that game, you don't know if he's right or wrong. And you're splitting hairs if you're trying to put blame on one player or another player or something like that. But again, it wound up being a number of like puzzling personnel decisions to the thing where when I talked about the starting lineup for Barcelona, as we kind of predicted, there was no other options. Like what they had is what they had. It was just, was Christensen healthy enough to start? Which the answer was no. And so Xavi went to with exactly basically the 11, where Luis Enrique has so many options, as we had discussed on that bench, that you can't say, what if Ugarte had started instead? What if this player had started? And I would say, too, as I kind of talk about the tactics here, you can say as a Barca fan all you want about Lamine Yamal's offensive performance, kind of looking like a teenager. Sure, he looked like a 16-year-old kid, being the youngest ever player to start a quarterfinal, by the way, in the Champions League. Cubarsí being the youngest defender ever to start a quarterfinal in the Champions League. So, I mean, whenever they do well, you celebrate it. And whenever they go missing, they're 16 and 17 missing with that stuff. They're making history. But defensively, I also want to mention Lamine Yamal and Rafinha, because Lamine Yamal had his hands full with Nuno Mendes in 1v1 situations. And I wasn't sure if he was fit, but he looked fit from the opening whistle. Nuno Mendes did. And so the idea from Luis Enrique, which I think was smart, it was like, hey, this is a 16-year-old kid who's been really dangerous getting forward, but we're going to try to pin him back as far as we can in that first half and need to put Nuno Mendes in 1v1 situations when Mbappe would drift inside and Koundé went at him. Or we're going to work a 2v2 situation and force Barcelona to defend and force Lamine Yamal to not be that outlet. And then we're going to step up the press and work through our press that way. You can add a little bit more to PSG's attack and some of the issues you might have seen, but because I want to go next and talk about the press and how PSG's press kind of got them started in the game, but didn't wind up going the distance.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main issue with PSG's attack is Asensio just not being in form and just got it all wrong. Dembele, I was really impressed with him. Again, we've talked about it. It's difficult to stop him one-on-one. Kangin Lee, I thought when he did come off, you mentioned, you know, when Warren Zaïre-Emery came on, that's when Barcelona scored. But I thought Kangin Lee coming off really contributed. I thought he played really well, contributing to the attack.
Yeah, I do too.
But really, you know, the PSG's defense, which I predicted was completely different than Luis Enrique went with. Why he played Marquinhos at right back, I don't know. Nuno Mendes, again, hasn't really been featuring that much. He's coming off a year-long injury, but every time he's played, he's looked really good. So I think you're right. He was able – they wanted to challenge him all a little bit, and so I thought Mendes did really good. But Beraldo, who, again, in our first episode, I think I praised him and it just being a great signing in January, he was sort of exposed in this game. He really showed that he doesn't have that much Champions League experience. So just all over the pitch for PSG, there were issues. And if I had to say anything, it's Luis Enrique, I think, got it wrong. Just in my own opinion and talking with other supporters, just the whole starting lineup, tactics, everything was just wrong. It just didn't work.
Beraldo's interesting because I think it was almost a worst case scenario for him and a best case scenario for Lewandowski. I know Lewandowski didn't score, but this was arguably his best performance. This was easily his best European performance in a Barcelona shirt. I don't have to even look that up. Like, I know he didn't score, but he was so essential in that game to what Barcelona were doing, which kind of does lead me into talking about that pressure now from PSG, that Barcelona did struggle at the start of that game to find their footing. And it looked like PSG were going to get one of those early goals that Barcelona, especially for January were really the first half of the season letting in like water. But then they seemed to settle down around the 22nd, 23rd minute, and they started winning their 50-50 balls. Lewandowski was 7 of 9 in the air against Baraldo, or even Marquinhos, whoever would come after him. He was up to the challenge, which, again, is not what we've seen from him this season. Or it was Rafinha coming in behind. And Barcelona, this kind of begins a bigger discussion, too, about Barca DNA, because Barca's success came in that game from playing long from Ter Stegen. The average length of Ter Stegen's passes was 22.8 meters against that PSG press, which tells you that Barcelona were not building up out of the back. Like, they were going long with it, and they were finding success with it. Even Pedri playing and breaking through the line, or the first goal, Cubarsí breaks through that midfield line, and by bypassing that midfield line, now Barcelona are in transition in a, what was it, a 3v3 at the time, and they wind up getting the right bounce, and Rafinha, good finishes all around by Rafinha, by the way. But I almost kind of roll my eyes about this discussion we had coming in, and somebody asked me about this, because I did say it in the five headlines, and I'm kind of rolling my eyes about Barca DNA. But I only roll my eyes at that idea because any team that's playing high-level football with the ball, we say that's Barca DNA. Really, you're just saying, at this point, I almost want to call, instead of calling it quote-unquote Barca DNA, call it Guardiola DNA or Guardiola ball, because that's really what everybody from, I mean, especially our generation, like anybody who is seeing a team play at a high level with the ball is trying to say, this reminds me of Messi and Xavi and Iniesta and Piqué and Yaya Toure and whoever, you know what I mean? Like, that's what we're talking about when we say Barca DNA. So I do roll my eyes about this concept of DNA creating a huge umbrella for every player who's really good at making good decisions quickly on the ball. But it's true that Barcelona, because they want to play that way, when they have players like Pedri, who has that, and the Spanish phrase is pausa, the way Iniesta is the perfect example of that, who just, you read the pace and understand where the ball needs to go, when it needs to go there, when to pick things up, when to slow things down. And so, yes, I think that is, if you want to say what is Barca DNA, those are the players that I think of, and that's the attributes that I think of, players that can slow everything down and play it at their base. Because Gundogan, is he Barca DNA? Or no, he's kind of Guardiola. He's just a high level, do everything, because he was phenomenal too. But the guy who broke this game open, though, was, again, Rafinha, because I'm not sure if PSG was actually prepared for Barcelona to, if anything, like, kind of, yes, be Barcelona when they wanted to be, but truly be willing to only score, especially in that first half, through Route 1 football. And I think Luis Enrique was a little taken aback that Barca weren't trying to be Barca, if anything. They were just like, hey, Rafinha, keep running, work really hard, get him behind. And the fact that Rafinha was the best player in the game, and this is no disrespect to Rafinha, it's that they played a way that supported the best of Rafinha, which on paper for 2 years now has not looked like the best version of Barcelona.
I was going to ask, because I get, like you, I don't watch a ton of, like, you don't watch PSG, I don't watch a ton of Barcelona. When I saw Rafinha, I was like, this guy is, I mean, he must be lighting up La Liga. He must be just scoring goals, like, just watching him against PSG. But it sounds like he hasn't been at this level. And just to touch on that Barcelona DNA, if anything, I thought that coming into this match, it was PSG, not only PSG, but some of their more veteran players, your Donnarumma, your Marquinhos, players like that, Mbappe, who didn't have a great game, they were sort of making the mistakes. And then you look at Barcelona with these young kids, maybe inexperienced, they come in on the road, the atmosphere was unbelievable, and they made no mistakes. I think that's a little bit of the Barcelona DNA right there, coming in on a big Champions League night, no mistakes, playing really well, scoring three goals on the road, which probably hadn't happened in a long time. Maybe you have that stat, but I can't remember the last time that's happened so for them. But yeah, I would say that's definitely Barcelona DNA. And our players, PSG, especially Donnarumma, I don't even know if you want to talk about him, but just woeful on the night. You talk about Ter Stegen just booting it, Route 1 football. We're trying to play out of the back with a goalkeeper who is like a newborn giraffe with the ball at his feet. I don't know why we think that is even possible. Every time the ball touches Donnarumma's feet, PSG supporters have a collective heart attack. He cannot do it. He is world-class shot stopper, but he cannot dribble, pass, distribute for the life of him. And there's been talk about, is it time to replace him? Is he capable of winning a Champions League? It's a serious conversation being had right now among the fan base.
It's funny, having you on is really great because kind of a different voice and a different way of saying it, because I think you're right. I think the way to talk about where Barcelona had quote-unquote Barca DNA was in Cubarsí and in Lamine Mall, because even though Lamine Mall didn't have the best performance, he didn't look like he was shell-shocked. He didn't look like he didn't belong out there. And Cubarsí obviously has been fantastic. I said that going in, yes, but I think that is what and why I think La Masia is still so separate when you talk about academies, because they do kind of let these kids know, like, hey, because of our whatever financial issues or whatever reason you're up here, you are going to be trusted in a big moment. And we have utmost faith in you. And whatever they're feeding these kids and however they're talking to them, these kids at 16 and 17 are ready to go when the lights are brightest. And that is just something that does set Barcelona's academy and all the players that they bring up. I mean, it was a little bit of trolling and memeing, but Hector Fort and Mark Yu, who didn't get in the game, they were getting, there was a video that came out about them getting screamed at by the PSG Ultras before the game. And they're just like video, they got them on the cameras, and like, they just like, these kids were just like, ah, this is fine. Like, I'm not worried about this. And I think to Xavi's point in the post game too, when, or actually I should say today in the Cadiz preview presser, he said that, you know, my decision to leave is still my decision to leave, because I cannot reiterate enough that these Barcelona players in particular do not get rattled, because the worst chaos and the hardest they hear it is in Catalonia from their own supporters and from their own media, and that in Torno, which is why Xavi's like, hey, I know I'm playing better, I'm very excited, this is great, but we've also only played well and we haven't been beaten since I announced I was leaving. So why would I come back? Like, why would we redo everything? It seems like this all worked and the in Torno has not changed. Like, pressure is still on, even though Barcelona is a victory, a 1-0 win away from the semifinal of the Champions League. But Xavi's like, no, this has been toxic from the beginning. I don't want to do this. And
So what you're saying is Luis Enrique needs to announce he's not coming back. Is that what you're saying? If we want to win this tie?
You know, it's funny because Luis Enrique at Barcelona, you could almost see it the same way. That final year, even though they won the treble, like, he was like, I hate this. I hate, not even talking to the media, but like, I hate the fact that this is exhausting. It's frustrating. And especially for these big personalities and guys that seem to, how do I say this? They're not just managers. They're like former players that transition in managers. And we see them, especially when they start at a younger age in the managing game, like, we just see them kind of as these contemporaries, and you put more pressure on the Zidanes and the ones that could be whatever, like, in a way that even though Deschamps was a former player, like, he kind of didn't hit his nadir of his coaching career. Same thing with Ancelotti. Like, they didn't really hit the nadir of their coaching career until, we'll say, the next generation, not two generations, but, you know, two generations that have, like, the next generation. So I do want to say, though, because there is still a whole preview for the next leg. So I think there's a lot of confidence on the PSG side, and there should be, because Montjuic has not been this fortress the way that Camp Nou would be. So I think the vibes are not going to be, you know, there can only be so many people in that stadium. It has not really been like an overwhelming atmosphere. It's just the stadium isn't built for that. And I think there's a lot of confidence coming from PSG fans that I'm talking to and hearing about, because you still have Mbappe, and there is something, even though they lost in the second half, there is something that seemed to have clicked and figured out. And that is, if we keep Mbappe and Dembele close to each other, good things are going to happen. If Barcelona have to figure out and kind of negotiate in close contact, who am I going to go with? Then there's going to be problems.
Absolutely. I mean, it's going to be an uphill battle. I know you mentioned the stadium. It's going to be no easy task, though. But there's certainly things, if you're a PSG supporter, you can get excited about. The first thing is Kimi's coming back from suspension. So no more Marquinhos at right back. So he'll be able to slide in probably next to Lucas Hernandez. And you're going to have Nuno Mendes. That is about as solid as of a back line as we could hope for at PSG. The question is really Donnarumma. Can he limit his mistakes? You really never know. So that's just a roll of the dice. You really don't know. I think Asensio is just a train wreck. I think maybe if you move Mbappe more centrally, that way he's next to Dembele. And then I think, I'd be curious to hear what you thought about Bradley Barcola. I think when he came on, he did a lot of really good things. When he came on the pitch, very Dembele-esque, he made a couple good runs. I think that front three, those three Frenchmen, Barcola, Mbappe, and Dembele, I like those three. I think there's at least one goal in this return leg. So I'm feeling really confident. And then Warren Zaïre-Emery, I'm not sure why he didn't start. There was talk about maybe in a previous match he had some ice on his hamstring, maybe he wasn't 100%, but we saw when he came in, he didn't show really any signs. So I think he's going to come into the midfield, play more of a defensive midfielder role, and let Vitinha and Ruiz do their thing. We saw those two connect for a goal against Barcelona in the second half. So I in terms of the lineup that is possible, I think Luis Enrique has to be happy. Now, whether he chooses that lineup, we'll have to see. Hopefully he doesn't overthink it. But I think we'll at least get a goal in this return leg. It's just all about the defense and especially Donnarumma. Can we keep Barcelona quiet? You guys have a couple suspensions. I think that's why PSG fans are a little bit excited. Roberto and who's the other one? Christensen. I don't know how big of a deal that is for Barcelona. Maybe you can shed some light on that. But I think that's another reason we're a little bit optimistic in this one.
Yeah, I think for the Zaïre-Emery point, again, for for the midfield. I think Vitinha was interesting because he had such an up and down game. I said, like, yeah, he scored the goal and he was really important going forward, but he also probably should have picked up a second yellow. Like, as much as that, you know, that PK that wasn't called later on for PSG, both the rest weren't blowing the whistle, and it happened for both sides. And so that's why I kind of throw those out. But Vitinha, yeah, for as good as he was, he also had tough moments, but I also think his tough moments, very much like Ruiz in the second half too, and then Kang and Lee who came off. But I felt like none of those three did poorly. I thought the midfield was fine for PSG, but I do think that Barcelona did a good job of kind of using PSG's press and their willingness to want to attack to kind of wear them down. Like, Fabian Ruiz was the reason why I think Pedri made such an impact, was that Ruiz and, well, Kang and Lee, of course, but Ruiz, I think, and Vitinha were pretty worn down by the time that second half was carrying on. And I think they were susceptible to, if Xavi got his subs right, which again, Pedri was really the only answer too. Like, who else are you going to trust? Romeo? No. And then Fermin Lopez also would come on. So you're not really trusting anybody else in those situations. And that really, you bring it up. My biggest question for this second leg is just that in the midfield. There's no Christensen and no Roberto. So it's got to be De Jong, Pedri, and Gundogan, which in name alone makes it sound like it's the best midfield, right? In theory, right? Those three you trust more. But the problem there is that you do lose that deepest midfielder who was essential to what that PSG, to drop into that PSG, not only press and to build out from there, but also, again, dealing with that false nine situation. So I think it could be an issue with Barcelona, because even if it's a false nine, like let's say Kang and Lee starts as a false nine, or I can't imagine it'll be Asensio, but what if it is Dembele, right? If it's Barcola on the right and Mbappe stays on the left and Dembele in the middle, that's going to mean that, is it Pedri who's going to have to be that quote-unquote defensive midfielder? Because then you lose something there. And then Gundogan, I would hate to drop him in. Like, it hasn't worked for Barcelona. So even though Roberto is objectively, and I'll say this for everyone in the back, objectively not as good a player as the young Pedri and Gundogan, there was something very, it fit the system. And I would be even more concerned, I think, if it was a target nine, because now you're worrying about Araujo. You're going to lose Araujo's ability to A, kind of move around and put out fires back there, because now he's going to have to A, worry about that slide to Mbappe, who I think will be better anyway against Koundé, but then he also has to worry about a number nine. Or more realistically, it's been Kubarsi who's kind of had to deal with whoever the number nine has been, and he's been up to the task, and I don't want to, and I'm not going to doubt the 17-year-old. That's where we're at with Kubarsi. I'm not doubting him this season, but it's also a lot to ask of that Barca defense, who were just so good, maybe the best of their season. And they, you know, not say they let in two goals, but it was two goals, but it was still probably their best defensive performance of the season, especially in that first half. But it's a lot to ask of them over 90 minutes to do the same thing again without an actual, we'll say, at least guy to man the middle there defensively.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, and for all those reasons, I think that's why we know the depth isn't there for Barcelona. So I think that's why PSG fans are a little bit looking forward to this one. We think we have the advantage. I saw some, you know, percentages and betting lines and you know, the experts, if you want to call them that, they're favoring PSG in this one. And as a PSG supporter over the years, I know that these return legs in Spain could be a little bit dicey. So I'm a little bit pessimistic, but there is reason to have some hope, especially with Hakimi. I think he's going to shore up the defense, but also getting forward. So if you're saying your midfield is not going to be as sound as maybe you would like, and PSG need to score a goal, I think when you have arguably the two of the best fullbacks in Europe in Mendes and Hakimi coming at you with that French front three, that's a lot of firepower for Barcelona to deal with, especially undermanned.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, again, Rafinha is going to have the game of his life because now, again, he has to do with Hakimi getting forward as opposed to Marquinhos kind of just standing back. So Barcelona going to need to replicate some of the best performances of the season. Oh, last question for you real quick, and then I'm going to go into a quick thing about the Cadiz game that's coming up in a few hours if you're listening to this or watching this. But what is your score prediction for leg number two now coming up at Montjuic? I guess, you know what? I'm going to throw mine out. I made you do the first one, so I'll throw you mine. I do think Barca's going to go and move on in this one. They are at home. They're unbeaten. They are in good form. And I think it's going to be 2-2. I think that there are going to be moments in this game. I don't know if PSG is going to be up 2-0. For your sake, I wouldn't want that with the meme and everything. But I will say that I think it's going to be 2-2. I don't know when or how the goals are coming, but I think that neither defense are going to be able to shore this one out. And I think in Europe, this game is going to get open. And I do think it's going to support both teams when this game opens up. And I think if PSG were to win, they're going to win 4-2. Like, it is going to be a shootout if PSG win. I don't think PSG is winning 1-0 or 2-0. I think we're going to see goals. So I'm going to go 2-2. And I do think Barcelona move on by a goal.
And that would make sense. I mean, the first 2 days of this stage, we saw just goals. It probably was a record. I had to look that up. There's so many goals amongst all the games. So I'm going to say next week, it's going to be a little bit different. I think we're going to see PSG 1-0. After full time, after 90 minutes. So that's going to put it at 3-3 on aggregate. I think we're going to play the extra time. I think this one's going to penalties. Just to give me a little bit more heart issues here. I think we're going to go to penalties. And, I mean, it's a coin flip. So as a PSG supporter, I'll say, okay, maybe we do the unthinkable. We win in the penalty kick. So that's what I think is going to happen.
I don't think it's that unthinkable. I think it's not. Like, PSG beating Barcelona at their house down by one goal in the aggregate is not insane to me. And Barcelona moving on somehow, it's crazy if you compare them to Barcelona in November, but it's not crazy compared to the last 2 months when they've, the 12 games unbeaten, which brings me real quickly to Cadiz so that we can let Ed go, or you can go over to the PSG talk feed and listen to my version. But real quick, Cadiz, the two names you need to know here are Vitor Roque and Mika Faye, because the speaking of the PSG tie, it should be full rotation. So nobody expected to start against Cadiz will be starting against PSG, because with Christensen especially and Roberto suspended, expect them to start against Cadiz. So some combination of those two, plus I would expect to see Hector Fort, whether he's on the right or the left. Marcos Alonso, who has not played in months, sure, throw him out there. And then Oriol Romeu, same thing. He won't be expected to start or potentially even play without the last 15 minutes if Barcelona are nursing a lead against PSG. João Félix and Ferran will get a start along with either Marc Yu or Vitor Roque. And then the other one will likely come off the bench sometime in the 60th minute or so. But Xavi did say that on Vitor Roque, here's a quote: especially in the movements, we have prepared a video for him for tomorrow. He's a footballer who can give us many things. Tomorrow, he will surely have minutes. We have to take advantage of how he uses space and try to make him understand the positional game. So a huge game for Vitor Roque, and also a huge game for Mika Faye, which I just want to say, people have been throwing it out there that just watching with Barça Athletic, because Mika Faye is a high-level prospect who is not necessarily ready for the first team, but also has the tools to kind of be on the bubble of the first team, because physically, he's already there. Goal scoring wise, I mean, he's a center back, but he scored like, what, 3 goals in 5 games or something with Senegal and Barça Athletic. But he is prone to these moments and lapses you see with Barça Athletic in the third division. So there might be a moment that comes against Cadiz where he doesn't look ready for the first team because he makes some kind of defensive mistake, but that's okay. He's still learning. He's still young. This is his first season of actual full, not even third division football, but full professional football. He played 6 months in the second division in Croatia. So give the kid a gosh darn minute. I know he looks like he's ready, and there are going to be moments when he chases somebody down against Cadiz if he gets the start where you're going to say, why is he not with the first team? He might even be there next year. So I'm not saying he's not ready or ready. I'm saying that he is still a prospect. So give him a gosh darn minute to kind of catch up with everything, and you can have a high level prospect who isn't ready just yet, but is ready in a lot of ways. And I know, I mean, you know this too, Ed, that fans cannot handle nuance, especially with young prospects. They're either great at 20 or they're bad at 20 or 21. And they can't handle to seem to have both those thoughts in their head. But yeah, against Cadiz, though, a reminder too, that they are just 3 behind Celta and 5 behind Rayo in the relegation zone. That Granada and Almeria are already going down, but Cadiz are fighting for their lives. It's a fan base that can get loud when they have to. They don't always, but they can get loud down there in Andalusia. So I expect a little bit of loud there. So we have seen, again, the starting lineup I gave you is pretty much the starting lineup, with the exception of maybe De Jong. He's an Ironman when he's healthy, so maybe Xavi just wants to throw him out there for a little more experience. But I'm not sure about that. I would expect that the names I gave you are the names that we're going to see start. So Ed's been here long enough. I think this is a shorter show, but we kind of previewed what is Tuesday. We reviewed a bit of last week. And again, Caddy's in a few hours. So the programming note about that review is that life comes first. So I'm a bit busy tomorrow. So expect that, Caddy. This is coming out so late before Caddy that just enjoy this. Give me a few hours. And then the Caddy review will likely be out early on Sunday morning, maybe, or maybe even Sunday afternoon. We'll have to see. So be patient on that one. But as always, make sure you head over to the PSG talk feed on Monday to check out the other version of this preview with me talking all about the Barcelona side of things with Ed there on PSG talk, as well as YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, all those places you can find him. And then I also want a special thanks to my patrons. Thank you so much for joining the Patreon. I had two more this past week, so you can see them if you're watching on YouTube. Close Facebook group, Discord. Those are all the ways to join the community, as well as giving a good rating on the podcast app, subscribing to the YouTube channel. Always a big help as well. Most importantly, though, thanks so much for listening to the show. Until next time, I'll talk to you soon. Forza Barca.